Welcome, clients and friends of the Showalter Group. This is Amy with the Engagement Edge, and we're sharing with you the final report episode on our Grassroots Influence Pulse findings. And this is the fun part. This is the part that matters most. The tactics that withstood the logistic regression and thus are most predictive of legislative success. And you might wonder, well, why does the methodology matter? Why does this matter more than the other stuff? I think the descriptive data is interesting, and it can be. But this analysis is critical because it reduces the chance for alpha inflation. That's stats speak for removing the proliferation of false positive findings and variables that correlate highly with each other. So it almost always delivers a smaller set of unique, significant predictors than an array of means comparisons will, and which is as it should be. Okay, so we want the smallest number of predictors that can explain the most variance that are least likely to be attributable to chance. Just a reminder, our definition of legislative success, our dependent variable, was a little more generous this year. Normally, we look at simply did legislators vote more with you this session than previously, or did you get your legislation passed? And we thought, well, we know there are fewer and fewer floor votes being taken in any legislative chamber, so let's look at more broad definition, some good things that relate to legislative success. So we looked at these things. We asked the respondents to answer their own. They self-reported on whether legislators were more open to persuasion, whether more legislators supported their issues. Now, definition here, supporting in this data set means that legislators gave you public or private agreement with your position absent of a vote. I mean, you had them on your side. You knew they were on your side. We also included whether legislators are more likely to contact a representative of your organization asking how they should vote on one of your issues. That's important nuance, not just asking for more information about an issue, but how should I vote? We believe that's a big indicator of success. And lastly, legislators who do vote with you more than they did in the previous session. So we still look at that ultimate metric, but we wanted to include some others there. So in this episode, here's what we're going to talk about, of course, with my color commentary, the three practices that lead to success and why I believe they popped in this data set, and frankly, why many advocacy professionals and other quote-unquote, I'm using air quotes here, leading experts or grassroots organizations won't talk about these things, and they won't admit that they work. Second, we'll talk about changes in legislative success predictors over the years, and then what hasn't changed, findings that have remained stable over the years. We've been conducting the GRIP research since 2013, but in 2016 is when we started the correlations and the regression analysis, logistic regression analysis, where we looked at inferentials and predictors. So those are the things that we're really intrigued about in terms of what hasn't changed. So that's where we'll be looking at it from the 2016, 2019, and this year's GRIP, kind of what hasn't changed. And there are some things you can count on that have not changed in terms of their effectiveness in influencing elected officials. So let's get right to it. So the big three, these are the tactics that predict legislative success. These are the ones that withstood that tougher analysis to find out what really matters. Number one, I have these in order. Number one, a net gain in PAC contributors. Net gain in PAC contributors. You may remember that we have not conducted research on PAC engagement as a predictor of legislative success. We've never included that in the GRIP previously. Why do we do it now? Well, because I've evolved. You know, when I learn more, I do more. And I very much believe that PACs do make a big difference in attention that legislators provide. They create more loyalty between the lawmaker and the organization. And it's really a public demonstration of your support of a lawmaker. And that increases allegiance on both sides. And so I believe it is a tool in the advocacy toolbox. And let's face it, the Supreme Court has been very clear that money is speech. It's free speech. And I wanted to include it because I frankly also got quite tired of the universal truth again, using air quotes, spouted by some organizations that money doesn't matter, PACs don't matter, it's just your advocacy, and that's the only thing that matters is grassroots. You know, the lobbyists and the PAC, they don't matter that much. And it was really a universally ignored truth that they matter. And kind of like the universally ignored truth that, you know, not all babies are cute and not all brides are beautiful, but that's another subject. Nevertheless, net gain of PAC contributors. So this tells me a couple things. When I see that an organization has a net gain of PAC contributors, that tells me, particularly in this very difficult fundraising environment where you have your association membership and or your corporate employees, your PAC eligible corporate employees, are like they're representative of the electorate. They are incredibly divided. They have challenges in terms of accepting perhaps some of the corporation or the association's legislative positions because they don't like a certain legislator who espoused that position and so forth. So it gets personal. You understand this. You live this every day. So when I see this, I'm thinking, wow, these organizations, you know, have a terrific culture probably of engagement. The fact that they're able to get more contributors in this environment. And part of this research was conducted in 2021 after January 6th. So you had a lot of factors that were negatively impacting the Political Action Committee fundraising professional. So take heart. Okay, that's number one. Number two, the face-to-face advocate meetings with legislators. This is not the gold standard, it's the platinum standard for influence with elected officials. I believe it popped really high. It's always been in the data set pretty much, but it's really very meaningful in this data set because this was hard to do, obviously, during COVID and even post-COVID. You had some lawmakers that still weren't meeting face-to-face. If you wanted to meet on Capitol Hill, that was very difficult, if not impossible. So the fact that some organizations decided we're going to do it anyway, we're going to find a way around it, we're going to do it in the district offices where we can, that tells me that legislators know. I mean, we know from the influence literature that when your influence prospect views you as having sacrificed or made an effort to do something and there's effort there, they view you more seriously. They're more persuaded by that because you're conveying sincerity. You're conveying strong convictions. And time is something people do not have today, or so they say, even though they watch, you know, they scroll social media with like a cat looks at dust particles, but that's another episode. But we really find that it communicates a lot when you can show up. And number three, larger organizational PAC contributions. So, you know, the anti-PAC people are going to hate this, right? The advocacy purists who do not like to know, they don't want to know that PAC contributions matter. They probably won't like this. So, but we asked the respondents, tell us how much tell us what your average PAC contribution is. And the larger that was, the more they reported legislative success. Again, I think this is important, and I believe it popped because it was unusual to provide larger PAC contributions. As we know, many organizations stopped giving any contributions. Some closed down their PACs. Some paused giving for an entire cycle. So you had some challenges here, and those that were willing to, again, publicly demonstrate that they support a particular official, elected official, or candidate had more success because that public demonstration in today's climate, I think, carries more weight than it has in the past. So I'm kind of tickled about these. That's flyover country speak for excited. A little excited about these PAC findings because I think smart advocacy professionals and PAC professionals have always known that this matters, but now we can quantify it. We can prove that it matters. And it's something people don't like to talk about for one reason or not. I don't know why. It's speech. And frankly, the maximum PAC contribution is not quite near as high as what individuals give to parties and other political organizations. So let's be honest, that it's not the end of the world when PAC hard money contributions proliferate. So what has been stable or you know, comparative throughout the years? Well, we asked different questions in the research through the years because there are so many things we can ask. I mean, I think this time, Kelton, Dr. Rhodes, my colleague, calculated that we could have had 101, a combination, even though we had 26 questions, we could have had a combination of 101 different variables and over 5,000 correlations. I mean, it's crazy what you can do with this research, but we have to keep it really crisp. But one thing we did look at, so we do tend to ask different questions over the years. Some things that we found, of course, this year, the big thing that popped was the PACs, because that was a new data point that we questioned them about. In the past, what we found, for example, in 2016, we found that, you know, positive lawmakers or positive messages to lawmakers were quite predictive of legislative success, like having solutions to your problems. Also on that list was new or better staff leadership. I got a kick out of that. I thought, is this bias, self-reporting bias here? That people were saying, yes, I'm a better leader. That's why we're successful. It's me. It's all because of me. But that's okay. Also the context, the influence context, negative or positive cultural events. Then the next GRIP research in 2019, we found that, you know, the political party being in favor of your position was a big predictor of success because things are becoming more polarized, more divided. So I'm having success if the party in power aligns with my perspective. We also did find there that email, particularly form emails as a grassroots tactic, were negatively associated, were a negative predictor, meaning like they were significantly bad at predicting whether a lawmaker would vote with you and support your issue. So some differences over the years. And I'll tell you, if you're listening to this and you have a favorite question that you really want included, we'll try to do that the next time. Just let me know. We'll try to make that work. There are so many options and so many things we can do. And so we try to keep it current to what's happening in the government relations world and what people are talking about. And so that's why this year we included the PAC piece. We included a lot on social media. We always include a lot on social media, but it doesn't show up well. Social media and text messaging was a big thing that people are talking about. So we included it, didn't pop this time. It might in the future, but it didn't. Text messages to legislators, that is. So what's stable? What can we count on over the years? What are some things that popped in terms of predicting legislative success and that were in the top, you know, the top responses over the years? They might not have been in the top three predictors, but they tend to have a nice trend line. Number one, face-to-face meetings. Face-to-face matters. The more meetings, the better. The more face-to-face meetings, the more legislative success you will have. Successful recruitment factors have tended not to change over the years. For example, you'll be more successful if the political party who supports you is in power. It's easier to recruit people for your cause. It's easier to recruit people over the years if you have success. So success breeds success. So tell the stories of your legislative successes. Tell the stories of incremental progress towards success. Maybe you didn't get a big piece of legislation passed, but you were closer than you've ever been. That's the story you need to be telling. So remind people of success because they're attracted to successful teams and success. So keep that in mind. And lastly, legislative losses are connected over the years to advocate burnout, too many mobilizations, too many calls to action. People are tired. Now, I understand there's gridlock. There's not a lot of votes being taken. So you're asking people to do the same thing over and over and over, and they don't feel they're making progress. And if I'm not having success as one of your advocates, I'm probably not very interested. It's probably going to be hard to get me to engage in the future. Like you, I read quite often of suggestions on how to, quote, you know, again, air quotes here, keep your advocates active all year. How to always give them something to do. And I I'm not crazy about that. I think that's an idea whose time has not come, because they need to rest. They need to not do anything. You need to take time to recognize and reward them and celebrate victories and train and equip and empower for future victories. You can't do that if you always have a 5-alarm fire, your hair's on fire, it's all hands on deck all the time. That is not, that's easy push button, remote grassroots. It's not empowering. It's boring. And it doesn't create an effect because, and your advocates aren't stupid. They know that you have done this before and it didn't work, but you're doing it again. You're not doing anything different. And so you're not even, many people don't even change their messages or do research to find out which messages work best. So let's not treat them like infants, you know, let's respect them, respect their time, because again, the data points to advocate burnout, issue fatigue as something, of course, that leads to less legislative success because they're not advocating for you and they are the most persuasive advocates. If you would like a copy of the GRIP top line, don't hesitate to contact me, amy@showaltergroup.com, grip@showaltergroup.com. We'll send that over to you. And of course, if you have any questions you'd like me to ask, any topics you'd like us to explore in the future, we're happy to do that. Just let me know. For the meantime, this is Amy with the Engagement Edge.